Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast. This is Steve Borsch. This is episode 111, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hi, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Yo.
And Phil Wilson.
This is number 111. We should have done this on the 11th of January.
Yeah, I know, but I couldn't figure out how to do that. Could you?
Well, we could have lied.
Well, I suppose. Oh, my gosh. So no teasing about the music?
I think it's fine music.
Yeah, I just wanted to have something happy today that I've got a new desktop wallpaper of a beach scene because I'm just desperate for nice weather.
Oh, stop. It's Minnesota. Get past it, dude.
I know. Man up.
Going to be over freezing, above freezing this weekend for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, so I've been kind of thinking about my iPad, and we've got two of them here and trying to sell one. And
wait a minute. You're not going to start the podcast with a pitch to sell your iPad.
No, I'm not. It's a segue, Phil. Come on.
Oh, sure. A handy segue.
It's a segue into the HP WebOS tablet release. I'm sure you guys saw
now,
that.
Now, wait
right?
a minute. You went from selling your iPad into the WebOS tablet.
Yeah. Not that I'm going to go get one.
Oh.
But
I still think he's trying to sell his iPad. So just go ahead and make the pitch. What's it got on it and how much you're looking for?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to go there. No. So
anyway,
you guys saw it.
Yeah.
Tim and Phil, you guys are Android boys. So would you go get one?
Maybe. It depends on the price.
Yeah. It's all going to come down to price. And I don't know. I still harbor a great love for an iPad. So
when are these things going to be available?
Summertime.
They're saying summer.
Yeah, they have to announce it way ahead of time to try to get some developers actually developing for it, right?
I think there's probably something to be said for that because WebOS kind of really sort of, fell off the radar when Palm went dormant.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's just say dormant.
Well, I did see some chatter by at least one of our local developers that seemed excited about it. So maybe we'll have some Minnesota apps soon.
Oh, is that the Dan Grigsby?
He's kind of
charged about it.
Yeah, well, and Matt Bauer is too. I saw something scroll by. I really haven't had time to drill into it.
But, well, I mean, I think it brings up a very good point that Steve had made in our pre-show notes here. You know, here's finally another contender into the tablet world. So,
mm-hmm.
It'll be nice to see some competition start flowing.
What did you think of the new phones they showed? Did you guys get a look at those? One's more consumer and one's more for business. Is that what it was?
I didn't see that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, the Veer is to it's sort of the small version. What did they call the Pixie?
The Pixie.
So it's sort of like the Pixie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Except it's got a slider for a keyboard. It's super small. It's got like a 2.5-inch screen. So
yeah, super small, yeah.
And then, the Pixie went crazy, didn't it?
Ugh. Well, you see a lot of those around because people bought them for $50, you know?
Who are you hanging out with? I've never seen a single Pixie in my life.
Oh, really?
I've
seen quite a few of them. I've seen more Pixies than I've seen Prees.
Well, there's that.
But the Pixies weren't as tiny as this Veer, were they?
No. They were a little bit, they were the same sort of screen size, but they had a full keyboard below it. This is same screen, but it has a slide-out keyboard.
Hmm. And the other phone I remembered is the Pre 3, they call it.
So that's just the replacement of the Pre.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
Did they announce prices for those phones? Well, they probably wouldn't.
No,
they
yet.
Didn't announce pricing or which carriers, but it looks like it's going to be both CDMA and GSM carriers, so probably AT&T and Verizon.
You know what's been fascinating to me is how first mover advantage is really playing into Apple's capability to stay ahead of the curve. Now reading about the iPad 2 and then the rumor about the iPad 3, which may be a smaller device coming out this fall. I mean, who the buzz knows, but you know, it's going to be real interesting to see how much they leap ahead with the iPad 2 or not.
Well, it all comes down to apps, and I think they've got such a lead with apps that the only platform that can challenge them is Android.
And
both the Playbook from RIM and this touchpad thing from HP, they have such an uphill road. And even though the touchpad looks very interesting from a technology perspective, so did WebOS on their phones, and this went nowhere, even though everyone loves Palm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's, you know, the big revelation today is the joint letter, open letter from Steve Ballmer, CEO of Microsoft, and Stephen Elop, the new CEO at Nokia, that they're going to be doing a major partnership globally.
Hey, and didn't I predict that?
You know, you did. Didn't
that
you?
Nokia was going to go
Windows 7.
Windows Phone 7?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Well, the guy running Nokia is ex-Microsoft, right?
Yeah. Right.
So he's going with what he knows, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really risky move, I think, because Windows Phone 7, even though it's a good looking operating system, doesn't have any apps and doesn't have any critical mass in the market at all, despite the billions or millions of dollars that have been thrown behind it.
Yep.
So I think that he would have been much smarter to pick Android just because of the market lead.
Well, I thought they were already saying they were, or there's a lot of talk they're going to also do Android. They're placing bets in both, aren't they?
No, they're doing this Mego thing, which is another joint venture with someone else. I want to say Cisco, but it may be another company. Anyway.
Oh, yeah,
That's their own Linux-based phone operating system. So what we just don't need another phone operating system, and we've got too many of them right now.
Right.
Yep.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, when you stand back and look at this, all the stuff that's going on right now, not only with the phone space, but the tablet space, and germane to our next, or to our first guest, the TV space relative to all the things that are going on, it's pretty doggone exciting.
Yeah, it is.
There's lots going on. It's always exciting.
It's interesting to see how Apple did what they did with flash memory on the tablet, because you don't see 10-inch tablets coming out. You see either 7-inch, or I think the touchpad is 9-point-something-or-other-inch. So they've got this almost lock on 10-inch screens for tablets.
Well, there was some analysis, Tim. I think you're really hitting it. There was some analysis done by whose name escapes me, and I'll put in the show notes, by a fellow who basically pulled apart the supply chain for tablets and basically said Apple has a corner on that screen size and on flash memory, more so on the screen size. And as a consequence, they're going to be the lowest cost producer. That basically
they did
nobody
exactly the same thing with the iPod with flash memory.
Right.
They bought all this flash memory up, and even though there's some competitive, music players out there, no one could really make a dent in the iPod just because they had such a dominant position there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's fun to watch all the strategic stuff happening, and Graham, you suggested bringing on our guest today, Aaron Weber. And he's got kind of an interesting value prop with his new company, Inveni. And I'll let you kind of talk about that. But the thing that really excites me about it is the fact that he's right smack dab in the middle. It doesn't really matter who wins relative to the content, you know, the video and movie content space. He's gonna be right there in the sweet spot.
Well, yeah, I guess it's a picks and shovels play in a way, but it's really about they want to change the TV and movie guide, and basically that's where they're going, is a whole new generation of guide, media guide, if you will, to help you decide what to watch like instantly. And you know, based on preferences and based on recommendations out there on the web from everywhere. I mean, they're consolidating all this in one big social discovery engine. And it's really still in the works for a Q2 announcement. But what was interesting, and you may want to bring him on, is the funding news he just announced, which hit TechCrunch late last night.
Yeah,
and it doesn't happen often that a Minnesota startup gets Silicon Valley angel investors.
Yeah, exactly.
Without moving out there.
Yeah.
So we're just going to wait for Aaron to pick up?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, he's coming on here.
Hello, this is Aaron.
Aaron, good morning. It's Steve Borsch, Graham Thickens, Phil Wilson, Tim Elliott, and I guess that's all of us.
Great. Hey, how you? Hey, doing great. Up and at 'em early after a busy night last night, huh?
Yeah, it was a late night.
Hey, Aaron, give us a little background for the folks on you personally and how you came to found Inveni a few years ago.
Yeah, so I guess originally I founded a company with my brothers in St. Cloud called W3i, and in 2007 I left an active role in the company and was just on a quest to figure out what my next thing was going to be, kind of in love with doing startups. And so I turned out that I'm kind of obsessed with advertising and solving the problems of advertising. And one of the things that advertising needs is more involvement from the users in regards to the users, what I call preference data. And so I started looking at how I could create a win-win-win, which involved the users, the advertisers, publishers, and the users' non-personally identifiable information. And so I spent a lot of time contemplating what that would be, and what I found was that discovery and decision-making, along with, you know, the personalization that goes along with that, is the key. And you know, when you're kind of pushing the envelope, there's not a lot of industry terms you can use for it, but we originally called it the personal cloud. Now it seems the taste profile or taste graph are probably good ways to describe it, and it's a collection of all of your preferences on things. And so think, you know, 5 stars on Gladiator, thumbs up on a restaurant, things like that.
Sure. Does this technology that you've developed have beginnings that, you know, in the personalization technology that was developed by Net Perceptions here locally in the 90s?
No direct relationship.
Okay.
It is great to hear Minnesota's name nationally, internationally recognized. I don't know if locally, we know how famous the University of Minnesota and Net Perceptions is in this space. They are the godfathers of the recommendation industry.
Yeah. Yep.
And there are some executives that have helped me over the years here. And yeah, there's just an immense amount of talent in this recommendation space locally here in Minnesota. We're kind of, you know, the Silicon Valley of the recommendation world. So.
Yeah, interesting. Well, and the other great thing about Minnesota is that the news that you just put out about your funding, that you tell us about that, about Silicon Valley investors.
Yeah, so to date, the company's been self-funded. And as of recently, I decided to bring in some outside, what I call smart money. And we're closing the round around $500,000. And we're going to use it to help accelerate our development process and get to market faster. So we have a really exciting relaunch coming in second quarter. And I can't tell you how excited I am of it, about it. It's gonna just, I don't know, change the world. It's really exciting stuff. I wish I could kind of go into more detail, but being in Minnesota and being kind of a stealth company, we're purposely trying to keep it a little under wraps. So,
well, sure. You know, one of the things that I was really excited about when I really began to use Boxy was the ability to do recommendations, or at least see what your friends are watching, if they choose to let you see that, and then also to get recommendations. But at the same time, I was using XBMC. I had a Roku box, and I quickly realized, wait a minute now, Apple TV, Google TV, yada, yada. I mean, there's going to be all this other, all these other places out there, and you're right smack dab in the sweet spot of being able to be agnostic when it comes to the places that people are using for their movie watching or video watching. Is that right?
Exactly. I think the industry is really fragmented right now, and I think it'll be a while before it unfragments itself. And, you know, users currently are having to, you know, make a decision by the source. So if I want to watch a movie on Netflix, I use Netflix to figure out what movie I should watch. If I want to watch a movie on Hulu or a TV show on Hulu, I need to use their recommendation engine. And what we're trying to do is just make it easier for the user and, you know, create a decision engine that's personalized and social that takes into account, you know, whatever the source is.
So can you talk a little bit about how this works? Because it looks like you're aggregating ratings from all sorts of different sites. So how does that kind of technically work? And how does it differ from the other algorithms that are out on these individual sites like Amazon and Netflix and so forth?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two things that we're doing unique. And one of them is allowing users to import their preferences. You know, we believe that these preferences or these ratings are the users, and we take a very strong stance on that, where we allow the user to download their ratings and bring it wherever they'd like. This data is the user's data, and so what we do is we allow the user to bring in their own preferences from other sites. You know, some of these people have spent, you know, hours and hours collecting their ratings over years. And, you know, they've created a nice asset that is perfect for personalization. And, you know, I think the asking of a user to re-enter their preferences every time they go to a new site to personalize it is a non-starter for users. They're not going to enter 1,000 ratings again and again and again, you know, spending, yeah, you know, 10 plus hours doing so. So we allow the users to kind of easily get preferences into our system through that importing process. And then the main thing is, you know, we need to do great things once we get it. And so what we found was, after studying the current recommendation world, is that a lot of times it's algorithm based and there's really no human involved. And so you kind of get strange recommendations like, you know, Rambo and Bambi, and you just scratch your head like, well, mathematically, Rambo and Bambi may be connected, but it doesn't really make sense. And so we leverage the crowd to refine this algorithm, this similarity of data that the algorithms have created, and, you know, really refine it so that it feels right. And I think one thing we're dealing with here is art. I think movies are art, and that with that there's a subjectivity, or there's a you know, something that only a human can edit and correlate. So,
well, and I really appreciated it when I first joined the beta, and you gave me a recommendation for Office Space, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's when you have that win, right?
Yeah.
You know, there should be more of that in recommendations in processes. And so, you know, that should be the norm and not the exception, I think, of these services.
Well, you know, I want to recommend one to you, Steve, as well. It's a sort of a hybrid of Rambo and Bambi. It's called Bambo.
yeah, but how do you shoot with paws?
Well, that's the Rambo part, you see. Oh, yeah. Maybe it's Rambi. I don't know. It's one of the two.
Hey, Aaron, one thing I was going to ask you is tell us about your experience at CES looking at internet-enabled TVs, or what do you call it, that category?
Yeah, internet-enabled TV seems like one of the terms internet the industry is using. You know, at CES, I think there were three big trends: tablets in every shape and form, specifically the Android and all the different manufacturers making Android tablets, Google tablets. And the other one was 3D TV. But the one I didn't think was as far advanced as it is was internet-enabled TVs. And, you know, it seems like every TV manufacturer is developing their own app platform that resides in their hardware. And so that to me was really exciting because, you know, Inveni was really set out to, you know, solve this advertising problem and help the users, you know, discover content. And so, you know, with the ability to move Inveni possibly to the TV, it really starts to unlock some really exciting potential for us to kind of work our magic. So I wish I could kind of go more into it. I guess I can give you some more stats on the internet-enabled TV. From my research and understanding, you know, the majority of TVs being sold at Best Buy right now are internet-enabled TVs.
Really?
And some of the stats I've heard from different people in the industry are about 75% of those TVs become connected to the internet. And Yahoo's TV widget platform, for example, has around 8 million installed televisions currently.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
It seems like, you know, it's still early on. It's not where mobile's at now, but it definitely feels like the early stages of mobile. And it's, I think, some exciting times coming ahead.
Yeah. So do you see a place for your technology to be kind of built into those internet-enabled TVs to allow people to, you know, find stuff that they might like?
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, again, it's almost made for that. So in quarter two, we'll be kind of shedding more light on that.
I was going to say you could almost do another demonstration at Mini Demo. You were the first demonstrator at the last one. You could almost do another one come summer, maybe, huh?
It does feel like that. I mean, really, in the end, the platform hasn't changed in the last 4 months while we're reworking the product. But the front end has significantly changed. And, you know, what the amount that we learned going to beta in September till now is unreal. I think we have a really great, loyal user base, and they're giving us some great feedback on in terms of letting us know what they really want. And, you know, really, you know, I guess in the end of the day, our first product, I don't think we really knew what we wanted, what they wanted, or guessed wrong. And so, you know, I think that's the iterative nature of the internet is, you know, these types of learning experiences are great. And now it's really, we feel we know exactly what the users want. They got to touch and feel the platform that we're on. And now, you know, we're reworking it so that the power of the platform really shines.
Aaron, I'd like to ask you just real quickly, how long have you been working on Inveni? When was it really, when did you give birth to the idea and to where it is today? How long has that process been?
Yeah, in 2008, the concept of the taste profile or personal cloud or whatever the world wants to call it really started to take form. It was probably early 2009 when it was, okay, we're going to do this and, you know, let's start building it. And so, you know, I'm a boot, bootstrapping style entrepreneur. And so I usually keep a fairly lean team of really smart people and, iterate in stealth. And then once I release, then kind of iterate based on user feedback. And so I'd say to answer your question, early 2009 is when we started getting the platform going. And then since then, the products zigzagged a lot. It started with a little more of a B2B focus. Then we kind of took more of a B2C focus. Really in the end, though, the code base has been reused in every single zigzag. So
that's efficient. I think it's a great example of the process in bringing something like this to market. It is a very slow process. And Aaron, I think that, I have a great respect for what you are doing there, as far as being patient and letting the process proceed almost to an organic standpoint. I mean, it's really fun to watch and see. So I know this is going to be good stuff for you, and the payoff will be wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's something that really there's nothing else I can do. I'm completely obsessed with what I'm doing, and and Web 3.0 will be defined by personalization. So whether it's me or another competitor out there, pretty much I think you can guarantee that is going to be the case. So
cool. Yeah, well, again, congratulations on your funding announcement. It's not too often that we see Minnesota companies getting funding out there and not having to move out there. So yeah, you get to stay here and keep working during the cold, hard winters, like our friend Robert Stevens always jokes about, right? You get a lot more done here on the frozen tundra.
Yeah.
Check it out at Inveni.com, right?
Inveni.com, free service, sign up. And if there's anyone that's looking for a web development or recommendation algorithm position, we're hiring. So trying to keep those jobs here in Minnesota. So yep, definitely doing that shout out to everybody out there.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Hey, well, thanks a lot, Aaron. I know you're busy and need to get back to work, and we'll be catching up with you again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Take care, Aaron.
Bye.
Bye.
I really admire Aaron. Aaron is one of the good guys in this business, for sure.
He really is. And he's just a really nice guy, too.
I spent a little time with him early on regarding Local Tone systems and Local Tone radio, and he was just an incredible supporter then. So I really respect him a lot, and I'm glad to see Inveni working so well.
Well, one of the things
I am anxious to see Bambo.
Well, there you go.
It's come a long way, though. I haven't checked it out in a few weeks. So, I've been looking at it, and it looks like it's been improved quite a bit.
Well, yeah. One of the things that he didn't mention, because we didn't ask him, is...
whose fault is that, Mr. Morris?
I know. Well, you guys are just, you're too good. I can't get a word in edgewise. But APIs that are available, like Netflix has an API that developers can tap into and pull data from. And so one thing I wanted to ask that I didn't get to was, what other organizations are delivering APIs? Is Boxy delivering an API and so on? Because I would love him to be able to tap into my Netflix account and pull my queue and make recommendations off my queue.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm using all these different services, it'd be great to, give them, let them tap into that.
Well, yeah. he does actually, and Netflix in particular.
Yeah.
So,
and they used to have a feature called Netflix Friends that they stopped. Is that correct? I recall Aaron talking about that last fall.
They didn't keep going.
Yeah, people used to love that feature, and there were users saying that Inveni helps, make up for the fact that Netflix Friends isn't available anymore, Yep. So yeah, they no, must be
If you go into your services thing on Inveni, Netflix is one of the services you can integrate. You can integrate Facebook, Rotten Tomatoes, Best Buy, Blockbuster, Fandango. So there's a bunch of different outside services around entertainment that they integrate with right now. For instance, it's brought in the last 64 movies I've seen on Netflix into Inveni because I've imported my Netflix settings.
So what do they recommend because of all the Murder, She Wrote episodes you've been watching?
Very funny. Very funny. As Graham will see from my stream on Blippi, I've been watching a lot of Doc Martin recently.
Oh, really?
Which is it's a British TV show. Sort of like a precursor to House, but anyway, it's a good one.
Let me highly recommend the IT Crowd for any of the geeks that are listening. It's available now on Netflix, and my son and I started watching it, and I hate to say this, but we were because you couldn't get it because it was a BBC program, so there were shall I say, other ways to obtain the program. So we started watching it like 2 years ago, and it was just a hoot. And so just start from the very first episode and go on. And it's just, unfortunately, they only do 6 episodes a season, but it's a scream. So my little geek son and I would watch. But
your little geek son.
Yeah. Who's actually an inch taller than I am and significantly more hairy.
thanks for loading us up with that image today.
Oh my gosh. Hey, you know, so yesterday, The Daily, Rupert Murdoch's new newspaper for the iPad, they had an update for The Daily. And I, you know, like many people, I've been complaining about how slow it is. And then you get the content and you look at it and say, geez, was that worth the wait? because it's taken like, honest to God, I timed it with the stopwatch on my iPhone. I timed it and it was a minute, 20 seconds
to load.
And I'm on a fast,
open the app, right?
Yeah, and I'm on a fast Wi-Fi connection. I mean, I'm downloading on the iPad at about 12 megabit per second download. So it's not like I'm, you know, it's not like I got a slow connection. And, I just thought, my God, I mean, I could imagine sitting in a coffee shop, you know, it'd probably be between 2 and 3 minutes. So the update was supposed to speed things up. And I don't know if you guys have used it. I don't know, Graham, on your iPad, if you've used it, but,
I have.
You know, is that the future of newspapers?
That's the future of newspapers, to be slower. But you got to realize it's coming to you faster than a newspaper would.
That's
so
right. You're waiting for delivery, but it's not nearly as long as standing on the front step and going, where the hell's the paper boy?
Yeah. Instead, you're sitting in your underwear in your kitchen saying, where the hell's the paper?
It is awfully heavy, you know. I mean, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's just fantastic. There are some things I didn't like about it right away. Like, I didn't like the feature of having to tip from horizontal to vertical.
I hate that.
Yeah, I'm not into that. They can lose that, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, it's rich, it's gorgeous. You know, it's great news. It's, you know, I mean, you know, let's face it, they've got a great staff of journalists and they're running it at way less cost than what a newspaper would be. So,
well, half a million dollar a week burn rate isn't cheap. But
it's a lot less than running presses and all the other stuff that newspapers have.
So my question would be, if you take something like The Daily and you make it exclusive to the iPad or to a tablet, are you really kind of putting yourself at risk and actually ignoring an audience that doesn't have access to a tablet or an iPad?
You know, surprisingly, you know, one of the things that WCCO talks about a lot, Greg Littman, I've talked to him about it, is, you know, the demo for WCCO TV is 55 and older. That's the demo. And it's the same thing with like NBC, CBS, ABC, Nightly News, and it's that same demo for newspapers and so on and so forth. So that's not the coveted demo for advertisers, certainly, because there's not hyper consumption going on. You know, people aren't building new houses and having babies and, you know, going through new refrigerators and sofas and all that stuff. And
of course, people in no age group are doing that. Yeah, no, I guess, not just the 55 and over.
Well, yeah. What I'm getting at, though, is why not make this available on a mobile platform? Why not make this available on a desktop? Why not just use the same content and develop it for other platforms?
Well, that's where I was going to go with this.
You were going to go there. Okay,
Let me just finish this thought. I'm sorry. Is that same demo, the 55 and above, are one of the most voracious consumers of the iPad itself. And when you look at the iPad and you realize how trivial and simple it is to operate in comparison to, a computer or a laptop or whatever, and you can really see why older people would gravitate toward it. I mean, my dad's 85.
So you're saying they're developing a platform for an audience that's already getting the same content somewhere else.
Well, yeah, I know. I think that's part of it.
Okay, so a 55 plus is already getting it from TV or newspaper. Why the hell do they need the daily? I think you need to be looking at ways to get this out to the masses below the older demographic. And, you know, I should point out that, yes, while CCO and most TV radio stations tend to develop audiences or retain audiences that are in the older demographics, there's still plenty of people under the age of 30 using all of those mediums. But that said, I'm just looking at it from the daily standpoint of saying, okay, so you've got this really great, and as you said, Graham, it's wonderful, robust content, but it's limited to the iPad.
Well, I got to think that they have plans to be on Android very, very soon. And I mean, aren't Android tablets selling for $100 at Walmart practically now?
As I look at the daily site, I mean, there's no way for me, unless I have an iPad, for me to see the content. Is that right?
No. I put a link in our show notes to a guy that's using one of the features, which is anyone that's using the iPad app can share the stories. So he just gets the paper and shares it with himself and then puts those on Tumblr. So you can actually read all of the stories. It's called The Daily Indexed, and it's been going on since day one, and it hasn't been shut down yet.
I went there yesterday, though, Tim, and all the links were not working.
Oh, so that maybe they've cracked down on them.
Maybe they have. But, you know, here's where I'll go with this, though, is you remember Bill Joy, who was one of the co-founders of Sun Microsystems, and he's the
Crazy
computer
Bill,
scientist.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
He once
What's
said,
he doing?
I don't know what he's doing now, but
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Yeah. But he once, this is a quote from him, no matter who you are, most of the smartest people work for someone else.
Yep.
And it's the whole point is, you know, that lends itself, you know, the crowd is smarter than the six panelists. You know, there's more knowledge in the crowd. And, you know, we could argue about that all day long, but I'll bring that back to the daily versus things like TechMeme or Google News or BlogRunner or even what the Flipboard did, which is, you know, you can pick and choose your sources. And then you have random sources in there because it's pulling stuff from your Twitter followers and so on. And that seems more efficient to me than the daily
Flipboard
approach. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but yeah, that gets to my point earlier. It shouldn't the tablet version of anything be kind of a multimedia different experience than a paper? So shouldn't it always be churning with new content? Shouldn't
yes.
you use
it's the new
video
content. Yep, yep, yep.
And yep. all sorts of outlinks to deep links to yes. to really bring more, you know, more information to that experience. And I don't see that with the daily, although no. I've not seen it on an iPad yet. I've only seen videos of it.
Yeah, I mean, is that the technology there, guys? I mean, are you seeing video? Are you seeing actual moving pictures
sure.
on the daily?
Yeah, no, there's no question about it.
And do they update it throughout the day?
No, see, that's the kicker. It's each issue.
Well, it's a newspaper. I don't get it. If it's a connected, always on digital experience, why would it be, you know, updated once a day? That's incredibly stupid.
Bingo. Yep.
Because I find that the New York Times app that I have on my phone and that you can read online, that is the kind of experience that I want. But I want more multimedia than they put in that, you know, and that to me would be worth a dollar a day. Or right. $20 a month, or whatever the subscription would be for something like that.
Well, I mean, is this just another example of old line thinking? You know, old line media types trying to adapt to new line media.
Well, they keep.
We'll just do the same shit on a different screen.
they keep throwing money at it, and you know, Rupert's got a lot of that, and this is like chicken feed to him. You know,
I think that Jeff Jarvis kind of nailed it when he said that it wasn't lost on him the irony of the daily launch at a museum, because you know, this is just the old thinking, and they're trying to bring some new people and do some cool technology. But they're not really looking at the underlying business, and they're putting together this homogenized USA Today style deal, where the future is really hyper-local news with, yes, some international coverage and investigative reporting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but the hyper-local, the trouble with hyper-local is they haven't figured out a way to make it, you know, to monetize it. That's the biggest problem with hyper-local.
Oh, true. AOL's doing some interesting things with Patch. So if you haven't seen patch.com or lakeville.patch.com down here, they do a pretty good job of hyper-local local coverage.
They do. And I'm curious to see how, and I think it's a wonderful example of hyper-local. And I discovered Lakeville Patch not too long ago myself, Tim. And the question is, can they sustain a business model with it?
If they can monetize it, then they can.
I know a company that's trying to help local magazines monetize their websites and mobile apps and tablet apps.
And what's the name of that company?
Godango. We've talked about them before.
Right.
They have people based here, but they're headquartered in San Francisco. But that's exactly what they're trying to do, is help these locally focused old media figure out ways to monetize the new digital platforms. And then they're making inroads. They have customers that are doing it, and they're actually upgrading their technology platform. And we'll be hearing about that in the near future, I think.
Well, it sure seems like there's got to be a better way. And what I'm finding is, you guys know that I use Google News or Google Reader and go through about 300 sources. And so, you know, there's like 1,000 to 1,500 articles a day. And here's what I've been finding lately. I'm starting to cull down the number of feeds that I've got, because I can go to TechMeme and I can see, you know, some hot article and then the conversation that's occurring underneath it. And I look underneath and I see probably 20 people that I follow. So as I'm scrolling through Google Reader, I'm seeing the same topic again and again and again and again and again. And I only really need to see maybe two or three to really get a good perspective. And every once in a while, somebody will come out with some great perspective and everybody will talk about that person's perspective, and it'll also bubble up. And so I'm even looking at my own news consumption and information consumption and asking some questions about what's the most efficient way of doing it. And it certainly is not having some group somewhere package stuff up and stick it into a print magazine or a newspaper on paper or a daily on a self-contained sort of thing, because news is just too fluid and dynamic.
Yeah. News is one aspect of media, but there's a lot more than, you know, fast breaking news. I mean, there's a lot more about features and, you know, the sections on the daily, you know, art and life and sports. And the thing that really ticked me off is they don't have a technology tab.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go to find tech news in that thing. Really, I haven't spent that much time on it, but But yeah, we're all about news, but a lot of people, I don't know. I mean, there's more to media consumption than just fast breaking news.
Right. Agreed. Agreed. Right. And that's where, hyperlocal or, where this technology can stand out is that ability to spend more time, you know, digging into a story, avoiding the news bites.
Mm-hmm. Well, and tying back to our guests, I mean, it's about people's preferences and what they want, you know, and what they want to do right now, you know, what, you know, that's.
Well, and they want to take advantage of multiple services. So again, yes, rather than say I'm putting all my eggs in the Netflix basket, I want to do a lot of other services. And it's the same thing with the daily, rather than say, okay, that's the one I'm going to pay for. You know, I would argue that it makes sense, to pay for the Wall Street Journal as a delivery. I mean, I would, if I had to choose right now, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, okay, you got to choose five sources, what would it be? One would be the Journal, one would be the New York Times, one would be the Washington Post, and probably the Strib, just because it's local. It's not hyper local, but it's local. And then I think the fifth one would be Google News, because it's an aggregator of all of it. And one, maybe Google News would be the first one. But I wouldn't want to pay individually. I wouldn't want to pay $30 or $50 a year for each one, or $100 a year, you know, whatever it happens to be. And yet, at the same time, I'm really struggling because I want investigative reporting to flourish. And maybe the model is MinnPost, and maybe the model is National Public Radio, and you know, public television.
MinnPost had a good year, I read, huh?
They did.
Yeah. Best ever. Is that because they didn't pay anybody for the whole year, or no?
Yeah, that all goes away now.
Probably.
It all goes away now that Don Shelby's writing for him. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, he is. I haven't even caught that.
Yeah, that just happened. Yeah. Yeah. He had an article. Was it yesterday, Phil?
Day before.
Yeah. Yeah. About that. He was a long article about him joining MinnPost, and he'll be a columnist. But, you know, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, he doesn't need any money, so they probably don't have to pay folks like that, you know.
Yeah, I think Don genuinely is interested in staying involved, and he still has some things that he wants to discover. I'm anxious to read, you know, something that he writes. I mean, the first thing that he wrote on, I guess it was on Wednesday, Steve, was you know, was all about Don. So I'm anxious to see what kind of coverage he does, or things that he does write about. We're all good at talking about ourselves.
Well, you know, I have been listening to people like Leo Laporte, another guy, Adam Carolla, and then there's one other one that are the top podcasts. And
it's a Minivate Gang podcast.
Minivate Gang, that was the other one. But in all seriousness, it's all about leveraging your audience. And I look at Shelby and I think to myself, this guy could literally do a daily podcast. I mean, it could be, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that. Maybe he could have people that he could interview. And I would listen to it just because I used to enjoy listening to him on CCO radio.
Well, if he's listening, you've just given him a great idea. Yeah.
There you go.
I'm sure he's thought of that, my friend. I'm sure he's thought of that.
I'm sure people have suggested it. And I think he does listen to the Minivate Gang podcast.
Okay. So?
Yeah. Why do you think that?
I'm kidding. I have no idea.
If he knows what's good for him, he will.
He will. That's right.
Yeah, right. The strong arm.
He's got a lot of time on his hands now, right? So that's what we need. We need more listeners who have a lot of time on their hands.
Well, you know who else? And this is going to sound funny, but on the weather, on the back of the Strib weather area that Paul Douglas drives, he'll write his three or four paragraphs. And the guy's pretty doggone amusing.
Oh, he's funnier now.
I mean, he really, you know, he should do more of that. He should leverage more of that. So
he's busy spending money.
Yeah, he's building companies is what he's doing.
Yeah, the guy's an amazing entrepreneur. But yeah, when he's on stage and, you know, talking to a group, he's really good. And I remember that year that he and Robert Stevens were on the same stage at the MHTA Spring Conference.
Yep.
That was awesome because they're both great speakers.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, so what's coming up? We've talked, it's pretty much the same list, the 2011 Nonprofit Tech and Communications Conference. And
then we got the Hat Trick Wednesday on the 23rd of February.
Yeah. The Mojo Minnesota Nonprofit thing and then the Cloud Camp MSP. Yeah.
But was that planned purposely, do you think? Or is this a mistake that they all picked the same day? Or there are different times, right?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. Well, I think the nonprofit thing is all day. The Mojo thing is at, I think, 4:30, and the Cloud Camp thing is in the evening.
Oh, yeah.
So in theory, you'd be able to probably go to all of them. But then March
19th. That would burn you out quick, wouldn't it?
Yep. And then Saturday the 19th, Mobile March, with the Mobile 3D thing the night before. Yep. And tickets are still available, but
we do have tickets left. It's going to be a great event, and we're I'm busy. Right, this last week focus was on the food and drink part of the event, so we were working on menus and that sort of thing.
Got it.
Lots of good stuff going on.
And I understand, Phil, that you're going to be singing.
I'll be singing. There,
no
gangster rap.
I'm going to be doing my rendition of Christina Aguilera doing the.
I just didn't need to hear that.
I have an even shorter version, my friends. So,
but at least she was better than that halftime show. Yikes.
Oh, no. I couldn't quite figure that out. What was wrong with that halftime show?
The first part, the audio was just terrible.
Well, the audio sucked, but audio that's not the Black Eyed Peas fault.
I thought the costumes were awesome. Done in Minnesota, by the way, as we all know.
Yes. The costumes.
Oh, wait a minute. I did not know that. What? Nobody tells me anything.
You don't watch TV? Local TV?
Yeah.
No, I don't watch TV. I'm sorry.
Well, they had it on the news. They had the people that did it.
It was done there in Brainerd, right? Or Bemidji.
Yeah, one of those. B towns up north. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't quite figure out the sentiment on Twitter about why the show was so bad. It was not that bad. It was the Black Eyed Peas, for God's sake. You know, people say, well, they're singing other people's song. That's what the Peas do.
I thought they were bad.
I thought it was just okay.
And that audio engineer has got to be
gone. Yes.
He's not going to work another Super Bowl. That's for sure.
No kidding. No kidding.
Also, the guy who built the temporary bleachers that they had to kick people out of and pay him off. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I can only think that's Jerry Johnson. That's who's
the owner.
Getting a little too greedy, trying to get too many seats in the place.
Yeah. Wanted to be the largest ever Super Bowl attendance.
Yeah. Well,
perhaps we should focus on the Cowboys, Jer.
Yeah, get them better. Any new news, Tim, about the Overnight Web Challenge?
Just about got the team together. So I think we're just one slot away. And yeah, so hopefully we get picked.
Fabulous.
So, it's coming up pretty soon now. So we've got to get our act together, so to speak.
Well, and then just announced Mini WebCon. On April 11th at the U of M. And I tell you what, they have been really good quality and very solid events and good keynotes. This year, a guy named Luke Roblowski has written a couple of books and is, I don't really know the guy at all, but the other keynoters are Nancy Lyons and Megan Wilker from the Geek Girls locally from Clockwork. And that ought to be a real good session.
And this is an event intended primarily for designers, web developers, UI people, right?
Precisely.
Yep. And it'll be at the St. Paul campus again?
I'm not certain yet, but...
Yeah. Well, anyway, somewhere at one of the U campuses. Yeah.
I'm just looking. Yep, it will be. At the Continuing Education and Conference Center, which is a great venue, easy parking, it's easy to get to.
Yeah, I like the St. Paul campus.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else going on you guys are aware of?
Locally, I'm headed to demo at the end of the month. Going to be live blogging from out there,
Denver.
But right? There could, let me just say, there could be a local angle. I'm not announcing anything, but there might be. I think maybe really? A possible local angle. More to come on that.
Ooh, mysterious.
Not really all that mysterious.
Teasing. But, you know, there hasn't been much of a local flavor, meaning Minnesota. There have been Wisconsin companies there. There have probably been Iowa companies there. But, you know, doggone it, there should be more Minnesota companies on a national stage.
Yeah.
And also, I would just throw out the invitation to Mobile Twin Cities on Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah.
It's that time of month again.
Got it.
Where's it going to be?
Where?
Yeah.
At Refactor.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We always meet above.
Northeast.
And Northeast.
Above Bulldog, right?
Yep.
And so what are you three guys doing on Monday?
I'll be worshiping my wife.
There you go. You remembered.
Oh, that's good. Right. Good. Gosh, got to do that. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
To worship my wife, go right ahead.
If it wasn't for the Minivate gang, I'd forget these things.
That's right.
We're here for you.
So right. It's supposed to be on a Tuesday, not a Monday.
Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
That's on the 14th, regardless of what day it falls on.
Yeah.
You could wait till Tuesday if you want to, Tim.
Yeah, that would probably not be popular. But you would get a good deal on everything.
It's true. Exactly. Roses would once again be cheaper.
And they mark down chocolates, too. So it's always a bonus.
Listen, guys, have a great week, and we'll do another Minivate Gang podcast next week.
All righty.
Good, guys.
Have a good
round town.
See ya.